Episode 169 of the TV Dudes podcast, recorded February 1st, 2018.
The better halves.
The better halves.
And the haves nots.
And like the long
is
range.
Is that what it is that we're going
yeah, with? Yeah, the better halves and the have nots.
This sounds like a terrible soap opera now.
That was a 60s group, actually. I'm pretty sure the Better Halves and the Have Nots.
Oh, man, they're so good.
They had one hit. They just had the one hit.
Yeah, yeah, it was, what was the song
again? The song was Good Intentions, Bad Results was their song, actually.
Oh, my God, your alternate title.
Randy and the Better Halves.
Hey, folks, welcome to the TV Dudes. I'm Grant.
I'm Randy.
I'm Les.
And this week, we are talking about Crashing over on HBO, Counterpart over on
Stars,
and Mosaic. This one's also on HBO.
Yes,
I didn't catch this one,
but it was good.
I'll have to check it out.
You should. I'll give you more homework.
Well, I'm gonna wait until we get to that portion of the show and hear what you guys have to say about it and decide whether or not I want to watch it.
You will watch it in the 2 weeks between the best of 2018 feature that we're gonna do. When you got to catch up,
oh,
you're gonna have to burn through it. It's gonna add. You're gonna have to go put it on the list.
You know what? Here's what I'm wondering. Do you think that our listeners have watched the same stuff as us by the time they listen to this, or that they listen to our reviews and use that in some way to decide whether or not they want to watch something?
I would have said A, but just recently, looking at the comments from this week, I'm realizing that people hear us talk about shows that they didn't know exist just on sheer volume of shit that Netflix drops per week,
yeah,
or Hulu or anybody else. And it really didn't occur to me that like people are listening to us talk about shows and then going, oh, maybe I'll watch that.
Yeah.
Like, I mean,
also some people don't even watch the TV. They just like to hear our tomfoolery.
That's so weird.
Because sometimes we spoil stuff.
That's true.
Oh, I spoil the shit out of things.
Yeah. And some listeners must not care, but maybe
some people are not big on spoilers. Some people just like that. They just want to, they can go into something knowing everything about it and enjoy it just as much.
Hmm.
I'm not that guy. I need not know.
No, every episode is super precious to you.
Yes, it is.
Never spoiling. I mean, I spoiled like this Hodor thing for you, and you freaked out like that was a big plot point or something.
I'll murder you again.
Folks, if you like this show and want to help support us, please go to iTunes, give us a 5-star rating, write a little review. We will read that here on the show. And we have a new iTunes review from Nurse Lady TV Vixen. The title is Bears Don't Know Jack. 5-star review. And Nurse Lady TV Vixen writes, I think these guys are great. You would have to be a bear with a thorn in your butt to not enjoy the TV Dudes podcast. Bears don't even watch TV. That's our review.
Look, I didn't want to bring this up, but since we brought it up, we need to talk about the bear in the room, which is that bears do not watch television.
What's wrong with them?
I don't know. Bears prefer they prefer to read. They like to hibernate and get a lot of reading done.
Very
and
literate.
Weirdly, they like NPR podcasts.
This is why a lot of people are scared of bears.
Yeah, because you can't talk to them about TV.
It's inscrutable. Like, yeah. I can't get my – I don't know what to do with a bear. Like, they read. They watch it. They nothing but NPR podcasts.
Do you know
like,
what happens?
What do I do with that?
They're unbearable.
Unbearable.
If you run into a bear at a cocktail party, you know what you do? You play dead so you don't have to talk to them. And so they don't maul you to death.
This is why people listen to our podcast, Healthy Tips About Bear Survival.
Yep.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, thanks, Nurse Lady TV Vixen, for that review.
It's really nothing I can't – I mean, I agree with that whole review. It's true.
Yeah, totally.
Once again, if you guys want to help us out, go to iTunes, write a review. We will read whatever you write on here.
Clearly.
And make sure it's a 5-star rating. That helps us out a lot. Thank you so much, Nurse Lady TV Vixen. Also, if you guys want to help us out, you can go to patreon.com/TVDudes, and there you can make a per-episode pledge. Give us a buck or two per episode, and in exchange, we do little fun recordings talking about whatever miscellaneous things. Lately, Randy and I have been just kind of playing games.
Yeah, last week we talked about what the best superpower to be would be.
Randy made a, what do you call those kind of charts?
It was like a challenge.
It was like a bracket.
Y'all didn't swat it?
No, we did not swat it.
You don't have corporate materials hidden throughout the office?
No.
I just binge-watched Silicon Valley for the first time. So you'll pardon me if we Jared everything.
Some people do March Madness. We did a bracket off for our superpowers, and I think ultimately I just wanted to be rich.
That was pretty much where you landed, yeah, super rich.
I just wanted to be rich.
So Batman's superpower.
Yeah,
pretty much. Except for without the ambition to like actually also go fight people. I think I just want to maybe hire other people to do the good superhero shit. That rich. That rich is how I
so
want
secure Main Manor or secure Wayne Manor and stop.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's about it.
Yeah.
Patreon.com/TV dudes once again. And we want to thank a new patron. Jay Wagre has now joined the echelon of beloved patrons.
The echelon.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
I'm gonna stick with it.
Welcome to the echelon.
My buddy Ajay, we go back to high school, and I actually participated in Flugtag here in Austin in 2007.
You're just making up words.
You did Flugtag?
I did Flugtag. If anyone doesn't know what Flugtag is, you build a flying craft. You submit a design, and if you get picked, I ended up winning and getting picked to compete in this. And you get to submit a design, and then you have to build this craft and launch it off of a 30 or 40 foot platform off into the water.
Yeah,
and
then
see
you
how
just nosedive it into Town Lake, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
And we did one where we made a flying DeLorean. So we reenacted the Back to the Future scene where it's a whole like, I got to go back and we got to go 88 miles an hour or whatever. I played Marty and Jay played Biff. So
that's amazing.
Thanks, Jay. And once again, patreon.com/TV dudes. We appreciate all the support. Let's go to some listener questions, guys. If you guys like us on Facebook, you guys can ask us questions once a week. First question comes to us from our buddy Kyle Volte, who says, so TV dudes, easy question. What would your alternate dimension counterpart be like and do, and how tempted to make out with them would you be?
Zero. Why would I make out with myself? I don't understand my wife does it.
Yeah, I got to go with 0% on that. I would have thought it'd been higher, like when I read the question and then went, no, I'm pretty sure we would just hang out in this complete like platonic, nah, what do you want to watch on TV? Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
And that's it. Like,
no, but your evil alternate dimension. So what is evil alternate less like?
I mean, I might take like a freebie kiss or something, just like a little peck, like a little like
just out of curiosity,
closed mouth.
Yeah.
Yeah, just because.
Or just be friendly.
Because me and other me would probably just find it funny.
Yeah.
We'd laugh about
that. Yeah, if it was for Instagram or something, sure, I can see that.
Nope, not for Instagram. It could be, yeah. What would our alternate dimension counterpart be like? Like, would they be evil? Is this like a mirrorverse?
Or the mirrorverse, right?
Yeah, the mirrorverse. Is it mirrorverse? Is there like a super optimistic, very chipper version of me?
Oh, man.
Like
hardcore conservative.
Yes.
You're going to kiss that guy.
Yeah. No. Yeah, because it'll piss him off.
Yeah, that'll get him.
Yeah, that's I think, yeah, hardcore conservative. He would hate television, hate comic books, super ambitious probably.
Mine would probably be like make really funny jokes, really bad jokes. And yeah.
Yeah, the hyper-competitive bro. It would just be awful. Like version of me would just be terrible.
Just no sports. They'd just beat us up. We would all get beat up by our counterparts.
That's absolutely true, yeah.
Jonathan Hatzmichael says, hey, dudes, it's hard to know what hot new shows are on Netflix and Amazon due to the limitations of advertising on their platforms. Sometimes you dudes cover a series that I overlooked and should watch. How would you increase the visibility for the deluge of content on streaming platforms?
If I was a marketing executive with like a budget to throw around, mm-hmm. like Netflix or Hulu, I would find a dedicated TV podcast that likes to spread the word,
like
and I would give them as much money as I could, all the money.
We are open to solicitation from any and all advertisers, but we are not cheap, folks.
I just can't believe the limits of advertisement is a thing.
Yeah.
I agree that it is actually difficult to come to get through the deluge of Netflix stuff and Hulu stuff and everything. But like, we live in the time of big data, and Hulu gathers a fucked up amount of information on me. And every time I log into that thing, it still suggests shows where I'm like, no, I was already watching that.
Yeah.
Never, how do you not know these things? And the same with Netflix. Like, Netflix recommends shit to me sometimes where I'm going, that algorithm's not working right or can't possibly be. How are they not advertising this shit better?
Here's a question, especially if you're Amazon. If you're Amazon and people are buying from you daily, probably weekly at least, why is there not an insert in every package of, hey, watch our new original programming?
Oh, like print?
Yeah.
Like printed the whole thing?
Well, you open to get your thing and there's a picture of a show. Like, that's an easy thing to throw in there.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I'd be annoyed by the wasteful junk. But, I mean, they're wasting already.
Right? I mean, there's plenty of ways. Like, that waste is going to push you over the edge?
No, probably not too much. Yeah.
I just don't understand how they aren't live reorganizing my entire – I mean, the same way that it would be nice if Facebook was just a collection of people I knew in the order that they posted. But Facebook is not that. Facebook is a complex algorithm showing me this fucked up variety of news feeds and setting all – and I don't like the way it's set, but I really can't believe that Netflix and Hulu aren't even –
doing the same thing.
Trying something similar.
Why aren't they like watching everything that we watch and then just targeting us? Like, Netflix tries and it always seems to suck.
Yeah. Like, I mean, Gmail, like Google has combed every email I've sent for a decade.
Yeah.
And Netflix still is trying to get me to watch a couple of shows where I'm like, fuck you. No.
Yeah. If I search for something on a whim, like a piece of cookware that I'm curious about, I'll be seeing ads for that for 3 weeks. Why is that not showing up in like Netflix and Hulu? Like if I show an interest in sci-fi, you know?
I realize I'm arguing for a deepening of the creep factor on on my technology, but it's already doing it. It's just doing it badly. Stop trying to get me to watch Disjointed. It's a bad show.
Yeah, I mean, I think their approach is working, at least for Netflix. Them kind of cold dropping some shows and surprising us and just letting word of mouth like build the hype on it seems to be doing pretty well for a lot of their shows. But, you know, social media targeting as well is just going to be the kind of smartest way to do this. And then reaching out to critics and, like Randy said, popular TV podcasts that are
perhaps
influencing culture.
Could use a little extra funding. You know, everybody needs a Ferrari.
I will say the shit marketing and deluge of stuff has resulted in something I didn't think was possible a couple of years ago, which is cold surprising us with shows.
Yeah,
considering
that's true.
We live in an age where you hear about stuff 2 years before there's a dream of a trailer. Like, why do I know Chris Pratt's already working on Cowboy Ninja Viking?
Yeah.
The movie's years away from being out.
Yep. Meanwhile, End of the Fucking World dropped. I'd never heard of it before I watched it.
So maybe inept marketing is the saving grace of me ever being surprised by a show again.
It's a good call. Michael Gassini says, hey, dudes, with J.K. Simmons joining the club of actors playing multiple versions of themselves / twins on TV, how would you rank the double performances of the last few years? Choices can include Ewan McGregor in Fargo, James Franco, The Deuce, Tatiana Maslany, Orphan Black, Tom Cavanaugh, The Flash, and any other notable ones you can think of.
First of all, I think he missed Tilly and Captain. I guess we haven't seen the evil version. Do we count that for Tilly and Captain Killy? Does that count as a dual role? Or do we have to see her play the
We
dual
saw
role?
Her briefly.
Okay.
You
we
see
didn't
her
see the real one.
Up. Yeah. We see the real one pop up angry on the screen once.
Oh, right? Okay. All right. Because I think you got to put that up there just because that's awesome.
Yeah.
I think Tatiana Maslany remains at the top of the list.
I think Orphan Black takes the
because you forget
lead
it's
here.
One person.
Yeah. No, she is spectacular. And I really – I've only seen two episodes. There's only been two episodes of Counterparts so far that I've seen. But J.K. Simmons does a Nicolas Cage adaptation level – difference in that guy. I mean,
you can watch the body language. And
they don't have to do anything in the scene to let you know which one you're looking at, and you are sure which Howard you're looking at.
I love in the first episode, he's like, "Which one are you?" And he's like, "Fuck you."
Yeah,
perfect. It's just like,
so I mean, I'm really, and Simmons is an actor that can really do that. So I'm loving his performance. I would put, as much as I love Tom Cavanaugh, it's so cheeseball. He's definitely at the bottom of this list.
I think the bottom of the list has got to be James Franco on The Deuce.
He's like the same guy in both characters.
Yeah, I love James Franco in The Deuce, but there's no reason to be two characters.
But Ewan McGregor was two very distinct characters.
Yes, he was.
And it was pretty fantastic in that role.
Although a lot of it was hair pieces and make and costuming and stuff. So he did have that crutch that that J.K. Simmons doesn't always need.
Yeah. Maxine November says, if each of you were a quest knight, a medieval adventure character class, I'm not sure what that is. Randy probably does. What would you be? Cleric, fighter, mage, rogue for basic classes. Crusader, warlord, battle mage, shadow for epic classes. And then she says, thanks, everyone. May your 2018 be filled with exactly as many fireballs as you desire.
I try to avoid fireballs by using condoms.
Oh, my.
So, so first of all, Max, nice plug. Medieval Quest Night is like a it's kind of like their Scare for a Cure. It's like a big haunted house that they do here in Austin you go, and it's like a 5-hour experience where you like you pick a character class, and it's like live Skyrim. They give you quests and all that kind of stuff.
Okay, right on.
It sounds cool. I've never done it. Yeah. I want to do it. It's for all for
it
charity.
It looks rad.
I'm so super kind of like picking a D&D class or whatever.
Yeah, I'm super excited to do it this year.
Yeah. I do wish on the site when I was looking at the FAQ, I wish they explained the advanced classes she lists there better, because I played D&D as a kid. I have a and as an adult, I have a rough understanding of the basic character classes that she lists, but I don't know what the advanced.
All I know is they sound like cooler versions of the basic classes. Yeah. Like the Crusader is obviously the advanced cleric, the Warlord, the Fighter, Battle Mage, the Mage, etc.
Yeah, so yeah, I guess I'd upgrade to Battle Mage from Mage, right?
Yeah, sure. And I feel like I have to be a rogue.
Yeah, I'm always like gravitating toward playing a rogue character when I play D&D, yeah. Because I think I'm conflict avoidant, at least like face to face, and I'd rather snipe at someone from a distance.
You should be a pacifist cleric.
Well, that's why I like to talk shit over a podcast. But if someone actually came to my house and said, "Hey, I heard what you thought about my show," I would run.
You'd hide in the shadows. Yes. And then backstab.
Yeah, and then back to backstabbing. Nick Ty says, hey, dudes. So I'm on a rewatch of Sense8, and I'm starting to think that maybe a government agency should be watching the Sense8s. Not BPO, they are super evil, but Sense8s are super people that can pull off coordinated, complex ops simultaneously and can instantly share information across the globe. At least hire them to be spies. They can be in an orgy and spy at the same time. They're like James Bond, but efficient.
Okay, I see what he's saying. But I completely disagree. There should not be any level of government agency overseeing the Sense8s. Everything positive he says they can do, all the spying and everything that he would want them to do, they can definitely do without a government agency. Any government agency of humans overwatching them is just going to be about fear and control, and it's going to slow them up. Because you're like, wait, I know you guys can all talk instantly psychically. Let me fill out the paperwork in triplicate, though, so that we've got record of all of it. Hang on.
I agree.
Don't have an organization. Stop any organization trying to oversee the Sense8s. If you need something from them, just find a Sense8 and go, hey, we need this thing. And they'll go, okay. And then they'll have it. Like, boom, the Archipelago or whatever.
I agree. Also, I believe James Bond can also be an orgy and spy at the same time.
Yes, it's true.
He's very talented.
He's very talented.
Jack of all trades.
Yes, a bit of a misogynist apparently, but
a little bit. Okay, final question comes to us from Jonathan Huffnagel, who says, thanks for the rapid fire list last week. And if you guys didn't tune in last week, I think I just rambled off a big list of different shows on different platforms.
You did.
I would recommend for binge watching. I find my soon pile grows larger, and over time, some things seem to fall off memory and get forgotten about before I have a chance to check them out. I just binged about 10 shows during my vacation days and also started to watch Britannia on Amazon Prime. So far, seems good. So I wanted to pay it forward and recommend some decent TV to you now. I now await the return of Gotham. Sweet, sweet Gotham. last month you helped me discover Future Man, and I loved it so much I introduced it to all my friends who also now adore it. If you really think about it, wouldn't Wolf and Tiger fit well into the rogues gallery of Batman? Batman has a bunch of villains who are almost heroes who simply cross the line or murder to achieve their vigilante justice or goals. Which of your favorite TV characters do you think would also fit well in Gotham City?
The gang fights Batman.
Yes. Oh, I'd watch that episode.
They would somehow accidentally win.
Yeah, they would accidentally murder Batman in the open. Like, they run him over the car.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would work out like the start of Mystery Men or something. Yeah. Like, Batman would have a perfectly good plan to deal with them, but then Charlie would wildcard this shit.
Yep.
And yeah,
Batman would end up doing heroin.
Yeah, like, Batman would be unprepared for whatever, like, rat-based weaponry Charlie's got.
Danny DeVito was the Penguin. So
I gotta say, I would love to see Wolf from Future Man show up in Gotham just to watch Batman, you know, fighting through his normal, like thinking he's up against normal people, and then they like stab and tear the spine out of somebody and like leave four corpses, with Batman standing back going, "The fuck is wrong with you?" Like, I could, like, ditch the whole, you know, vocoder thing in his cowl and everything. Like, his normal voice, like Bruce Wayne, go, Jesus Christ!
Oh, man, season two is going to be so good.
I can't wait for season two of Future Man, yes.
How do you guys feel about reboots?
I can't get enough.
Because it seems like...
You are in luck, sir.
Every network is rebooting everything, except Terriers and Middlemen.
Yes.
Which remain unloved and left to the silo. I don't want them rebooted now that I think about it.
Yeah, I just want them continued.
Yeah. But. So let's run it down. Charmed is getting a reboot at the CW.
Did you guys ever watch the original Charmed?
Yes, because my daughter was obsessed with it for a while.
It used to be rerun on TNT right next to other things, so I've seen the ending 15 minutes or the starting 10 minutes of a Charmed episode from time to time.
I have no idea. I think it's like three witches that just like live in a house together.
They're witches and sisters.
Yeah.
And so, they have trouble with romance, and sometimes they fall for guys, and they almost always turn out to be warlocks or demons or something
like
bad.
Shannon Doherty and Rose McGowan and like a third person.
Holly Marie Combs and Alyssa Milano.
Alyssa Milano.
Oddly, Charmed shared a lot of writing staff with Middleman.
Really?
That is odd.
So like three people I've talked to, including Javier Grillo Markswatch, wrote on Charmed. And Middleman was partly a response to the fact that on Charmed, if they did a vampire story, for instance, they would have to explain vampires. Because like it was told to them expressly to assume that the Charmed audience does not know sci-fi bullshit and fantasy folklore and stuff. So like if you did zombies, you had to explain zombies.
Yeah.
In a way that like no movie since the 80s has had to do. And so Middleman was kind of like, no, we're gonna assume that everybody in the world has heard of all of this shit. And
yeah. That's terrible.
So I of course actually when they announced the Charmed reboot, I think Grillo Markswatch's statement was, if Charmed is too sacred to reboot, you need to rethink Divinity. Like, there's nothing sacred about this show. Reboot it if you want.
Yeah, so they apparently the original stars were going to be incorporated. That fell through. But the pilot has been greenlit. Is from the writers of Jane the Virgin.
Mm.
Okay.
And it's called a fierce, funny, and feminist reboot.
Cool.
Practical okay. Magic for TV. Okay.
It's CW. I think of all the shows we're about to talk about, that is probably the one that's the best shot. Greatest American Hero reboot has got a pilot order at ABC.
I want to see this. I don't know that it'll work, but holy shit, I want to see this.
Okay, so this one is being written by Rachna Fruckborn. Oh, that's probably the name. Fresh Off the Boat, which is good. And Nanachta Khan, who I believe is also on Fresh Off the Boat.
And Don't Trust the Bee.
Serves as executive producer. So that's interesting. That's got potential.
Yeah. They're doing Greatest American Hero, which is the William Catt superhero show. He's
a substitute teacher, yep.
For underprivileged youth. He's got a rough class of kids, yep. And finds a super suit in the desert, but he throws loses the instruction manual with it.
And he's so, that dude who's got like this super blonde perm. Curly wig.
Yeah,
yep.
Yeah.
Yep. All
right. Yeah, the blonde perm. Yeah, so he's got a super suit, but no instruction manual. It was a show when I was a kid that I loved, and they're rebooting it with the as like the mini project.
Here's my question to you, Les. Can you remember a single episode of that show? Like what happened in it?
Only because I've rewatched them
really?
As an adult.
Oh, okay. Because here's what I remember. He's trying to fly, and a kid in an alley tells him to take three steps, and that's how you learn to fly. That is the only thing I remember, and I watched, I think, every episode of this show.
That's about it. I mean, some other stuff happens. It involves kids and crime. But
yeah, it's a half-hour single-camera comedy, and it's Mira, a 30-year-old Indian-American woman who comes into possession of an alien supersuit. She transforms a regular woman who loves tequila and karaoke to a reluctant and somewhat clueless superhero. That and that creative team, I'm kind of in.
This sounds different enough than any other – like this sounds really fun. I'm at least interested to see the pilot. I'm glad it got at least a pilot order.
And ABC does good comedies. Yeah. I mean I don't watch any of them.
I can't verify. I'm going to have to take a moment to even verify that. Do they?
I don't watch any of them, but Blackish.
Okay, okay.
I
have no idea what's
on
what
network.
The
Middle is supposed to be good. Like, all the stuff that's on ABC, and they, the good ones they canceled, like Suburgatory.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And Trophy Wife. And
Cougar Town.
So maybe this will be spectacular and then canceled. And
yes, that's likely, I think. CBS has pilot orders for Magnum P.I. and Cagney and Lacey reboots.
Who could play Tom Selleck with that same Tom Selleck mustache
Paul
sex
Rudd.
Appeal?
Yes, oh, I would watch that. I would watch the shit out of that.
Shit.
But with Mute coming out with Paul Rudd's porn star stash?
Yeah.
But isn't this Magnum's daughter, or did they not go with that? I guess Higgins is going to be MI6 agent Juliet Higgins. She will deal with the subject of PTSD. It says the millennial version of the private detective is a decorated ex-Navy SEAL who's specializing in lost causes. I thought it was going to be Magnum's daughter, but I guess maybe that didn't go
forward.
As
long as there is a bubble helicopter, I'm cool.
And, yeah, Cagney and Lacey is – oh, my God. It's from Bridget Carpenter, who worked on Westworld, is the writer and executive producer.
Whoa. Is it going to be the daughters of Terry Crews on Brooklyn Nine-Nine?
That'd be amazing, Cagney and Lacey.
It's just his kids and him dealing with them? That'd be perfect.
What if it's a gender flipped and it's two dudes named Cagney and Lacey? It's their sons. Raised in feminist households as cops.
Okay.
And they can never get out of the shadow of their moms.
Exactly.
At the precinct.
This could be interesting.
God, I may watch all these shows, at least the pilot episodes. Finally, Superman prequel series Metropolis has been ordered by DC's streaming service. They're setting up a lot of these Warner Brothers streaming. You know, they're doing Young Justice, a few other things. The interesting thing about this is it's going to be Lex Luthor and Lois Lane investigating the world of fringe science and exposing the city's dark and bizarre secrets, which is interesting enough. This is being produced by John Stevens and Danny Cannon, the executive producers on Gotham. So this is going to be bonkers as hell.
This feels like yet another comic book announcement where I just am going to have to stand back for the 2 years it's going to take for this to hype up, flop, and finally die.
Gotham's still going,
but Gotham's still going. So maybe it's not true. But this just sounds like one of those, like, no one wants this. That sounds like a bad idea. We're all going to collectively say it's a bad idea for a year while you spend a fuckload amount of money to make it, and then it's going to eventually stop.
Actually, I'm on board with this one. I love the idea of a Lois and Lex before Superman in a weird science-y Metropolis.
I just am baffled by the fact that the company that cannot for the life of them tell a fucking Superman story seems to think that they can tell every ancillary Superman story without figuring out the core first.
Yeah.
I don't understand why comic book fans seem to have such low standards in television. Like, there's only like one good superhero show.
Legion.
Yeah.
Like that's it.
What about Inhumans, Grant?
Yeah. Are you excited?
Ooh, season
for
2's gonna fucking rock.
I'm watching every episode.
I can't wait to hear your review.
I'm gonna make a deep dive on each episode.
So we are going to start with HBO, and we're going to start with Crashing and then Mosaic. Then we're going to jump over to Stars and wrap things up talking about the new J.K. Simmons show Counterpart. But first up, Crashing is back for season 2 over on HBO. The first 3 episodes of the Pete Holmes comedy are out, and we've been able to catch up and check it out. So
wait, this is not the BBC 4 show with Phoebe Waller-Bridge?
Oh, no.
God damn.
Are you talking about Fleabag?
No, she did a show. This is seriously, though. This is why I didn't watch Crashing for the whole first season. I honestly, people were talking about this great show called Crashing, and I was like, I fucking know Phoebe Waller-Bridge is amazing. There's a BBC show called Crashing.
Oh,
yeah. So I honestly thought people were talking about a UK show for a year.
The new season picks up, and he's still the same sad sack that we saw before. It doesn't seem to revolve as much around him crashing on couches.
I mean, he still didn't have a place to live.
Yeah, he's still homeless in season two.
He's like living in that garage now with Leaf, right?
Sort of. I mean, it's a storage unit,
at
right?
At least for two of the three episodes, though, he doesn't go home to it. He crashes with Bill Burr.
Yeah, yeah. So what are you guys thinking?
I really liked – I didn't like the first episode of this really when I first watched it. And I think I didn't watch the rest. And then I went back to it and fell in love with the show in season one. Gotcha. And I fell in love with it. And so I was excited to see it back. And yeah, it's the same show that it was that I loved.
For the purposes of the show this week, I knew I didn't have time to catch up on the show. So I only watched season two. Figuring it's a comedy.
Yeah.
You know, it probably wouldn't be anything. And I was fine.
Yeah, you didn't really miss out on too much. It's a slow build in the first season.
Yeah.
But it's more of like...
I was kind of wondering that.
Like comedy show for comedians,
there
right?
didn't seem like a yeah. whole lot of backstory where I went, it took a whole season to establish that he's living with Leaf. Like, that seems like the end of the pilot. Like, yeah. I kind of felt like season one might have just been the pilot, and I was caught up.
Yeah.
But season two, the three I watched, well, the three that exist, were funny as shit.
Yeah, this is really funny. His whole... born again, clueless Christian, nice guy thing is really funny.
Season two, it looks like that's breaking.
A little bit.
He starts drinking. Penn Jillette kind of convinces him to question it all. Yeah. That was beautifully
that was
explained,
so good.
Too. I really like Penn. Well, I disagree with Jillette on libertarianism, but I really like his explanation for atheism.
Sure. Yeah.
But yeah, so I was kind of sitting there going, I don't know that I could have done a whole first season of you resisting all of this. I would have wanted to see him break like this and get hammered drunk in the first season.
I thought he did get wasted.
He does.
He definitely does.
He does coke or something, right?
Yeah, there's some. There's.
It seems like he never fucking drank before. Like in at least the start of season two. Like I honestly wondered in the episode if he had ever drank before.
Yeah.
and I thought, man, I don't know if I could have made it through all of season one with you being.
I think if you like season two, you'll like season one because it's similar. It's just different comedians and. Watching him flame out at the warm up comedian thing. That's one of the big.
Is that
things
where
in
he tells
one.
The?
Yes.
Because people keep referring to that. So yes. You do that set. I'd have kept that to myself.
That actually happens.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, it's a funny show, but it's like pretty small and intimate, and it doesn't really progress too quickly. It's just another day in the life of this dude who's schlubby and sort of trying to make it, but not even like. Putting in
feels
that
very
much of an effort
to me.
Yeah.
There's
I can
times
see
where
that.
I feel like this is a non-story in these people's lives. Like their lives are going to stay the same. I'm not watching anything huge build.
Yeah.
This episode really exists to have a couple of great cameos.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Yeah, but
which isn't
like,
a bad thing necessarily. But
with extras, it felt like it kind of hums along for a little bit, and then it makes a big dramatic shift.
Yeah.
And like especially when Ricky Gervais's character like makes it big.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
We haven't seen any, like, even glimmer, it seems, of that. It's like...
There have already been... I mean, they're at least in season two, when he's on Bill Burr's couch and, like, I don't know the other guy's name. I've seen him be the best friend in three failed sitcoms with the beard that works at King
Yeah,
that,
from A to Z or
yeah.
whatever.
Yeah.
There's moments where they're all like, you've been to Bill Burr's house? Like, some things seem to have happened for Pete...
Well, that's the thing. He is running with like A-list comedians.
That's
and
what's
all,
killing
they all
me.
Know him and they like him,
yeah.
but they all feel sorry for him. None of them are giving him work.
Yeah, like he's barely getting. I mean, like he warmed up Dr. Oz in this season. Like he's
and he does Rachel Ray in season one.
Yeah, yeah. He's made $600 total that we know
yeah,
of in the
yeah.
in the show. yeah, like but he's running with A-list comedians, and I realize that like even famous comedians are not doing well. Like,
yeah, sure.
I realize stand-up comedy is like a. You were starving at the top of it.
Constant
but,
hustling game, yeah.
Yeah. But still, yeah, there's already been some moments in season two where I've gone, how the fuck are you in this room but can't get stage time except for standing on the corner?
They have a pretty good, somewhat organic scene of how he meets Artie Lang. And Artie Lang ends
okay.
up being his connection to all these other characters.
Yeah, I guess because not seeing how he met anybody, he
yeah.
seems
yeah.
like he's in a... like. Really incongruous point in yeah. his career.
It's all
know.
Because of Artie Lang.
Oh, okay.
It's because of Artie
okay.
Lang. Yeah, he became buddies with him and helped him out with the thing. But yeah, the thing is, this is like comfort food comedy for me. Like it's inoffensive 30 minutes. It cracks me up.
Marvelous Mr. Maisel.
Marvelous Mr. Maisel.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. well, let's jump over to the show Mosaic because I haven't heard of this and I didn't watch it, but you both watch it and it's six episodes
yep.
on
yeah.
HBO.
Yep.
And all I knew about it was that Sharon Stone was in it. It was a separate six-episode miniseries, and Steven Soderbergh was directing it. So I was like, oh, well, that should definitely go on the list. But Les, you said there's a story behind all this.
So there's a lot to Mosaic. So Soderbergh recently has been doing a lot of things that mess with the paradigms of this industry in different ways. Logan Lucky, his most recent actual movie in theaters, was done with no studio participation. I don't think any he distributed it himself. He's been doing this since like Bubble, I think, in the early 2000s, where he's done just weird, what's the new distribution model? Let's try torrenting out a movie. Let's try doing this. Let's see what we can do to disrupt this system.
He did one that we released like simultaneously in theaters and video. Yeah. Was that Bubble?
I think that might have been Bubble.
Yeah, where people were really not happy about
that. No, but somebody had to – and this is how I feel about a lot of these experiments. Somebody has to try this.
Yeah.
Like it's not going to work the way – it's not going to be perfect the first time.
Yeah, because he kind of like retired, but then he didn't. Instead, he went, no, actually, I'm just going to retire from doing what I did, and I'm just going to try new things.
Yeah, yeah. He's retiring from being on the list of who the studio ought to call for the next movie.
Yeah. Right.
But he's just doing whatever the fuck he wants. That said, so Mosaic is him and Ed Solomon, who wrote Men in Black and Bill and Ted.
Interesting.
Bill and Ted. That, I mean, that makes me think it's a certain thing already.
Yes, and honestly, I had no idea what I was walking into on Mosaic. So, so they got together, and they got together with, I don't know who made the app, but there's an interactive app. And the way Mosaic was originally released prior to being dropped on HBO was through this app where basically it's like they – it seems like they wrote and shot a third more series than they needed.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the option not of changing the plot but of changing – which character you're following out of this scene or exploring more of. So,
is it like the protagonist kind of shift?
So like I could get through the entire murder mystery in theory in the app by following side characters. Hmm. And there's an off chance that I could in theory get through it and miss a part of the plot that might actually make it make sense to me. But apparently they agonized over the script so that it is written in such a way that you could damn near watch – you could damn near run through the app on random, and you would probably, if you were curious at all and ever followed a fucking lead, figure out that you would still enjoy it as a murder mystery. The thing that's on HBO now, because I didn't do any of that. I don't play video games. I don't want my fucking narrative entertainment video gamed. That's me. The way that they dropped it on HBO was slightly truncated. They edited it down to the more pure, straight through story. For me, though. There are still moments in the HBO series that feel like the take runs long, or that it is the world's weirdest info dump. Where I almost feel like we got to the cutscene where somebody turns and goes, "Okay, Hawk, we have to run through this door and shoot 12 aliens. Do you have your gun?" Like, and so there's these moments every once in a while where I go, "Okay, I just have to tap my foot while you get through your." The bits of the interactive game you couldn't fully cut out of the story, and then we'll get back to what is a spectacular murder mystery.
That's interesting. I didn't know any of this. And I guess to me, this feels like Soderbergh's indie projects. Like it feels like – and he, which he does. Like it's all takes that run long and improv and that kind of mm-hmm. Like Full Frontal is one of those where it's like there's so many memorable scenes. But if you ask me what that movie is about, I can't tell you.
Well, and let's save on budget by blowing the light out of every window.
Yeah.
So that you don't see what's outside anything. Like there's a lot of things that make this feel, I won't say cheap, but cost effective,
mm-hmm.
in their use of sets and stuff. But it consequently gives it moments every once in a while of going, "Am I watching amateur video camera?"
I'll say this: the cast is pretty great here. Like, and I'm not saying the like big names. Like they've got Sharon Stone for a little bit, but like the people who are playing Petra Neal, who becomes sort of the sister, who's like the big.
She's great.
She's fantastic. I've never seen her in anything.
Eric Neal, the brother.
Yeah.
The,
Frederick Weller plays that.
He is spectacular.
Devin Rattray, who plays Nate, who's the investigator.
So I was telling Grant before we started to Devin Rattray.
Yeah.
And he's like the fat, stupid best friend and stuff, I feel like.
Oh, that
I've
makes,
seen
yeah.
him in
yeah,
stuff. I've seen him
sense,
three or four
actually.
Things, but I've never gotten to see him be the officer in charge of a case. And he's great in this. I hope.
What? This is Buzz McAllister from Home Alone.
That's why yep. I know him. Yep. He's Buzz from Home Alone. I'm like, yep. Why are you the D-bag brother? You're the D-bag brother.
He's great here because it reminds me of a character actress who shows up for two episodes in short is from Fargo, from the first season of Fargo. And now I'm blanking her name and I really like that actress. But she was the lead detective in Fargo season one. And she's here as an attorney.
Yeah, all right.
And so he reminds me of that character. He's like he seems like the unassuming, sort of normal, regular guy, but he's actually a really sharp investigator.
When Petra starts pushing him on, like, now you, Bumpkin, you just didn't check up on this, and he shuts her down a couple of times of like, hey, it may shock you to find this out, but I followed up on that. Yes, we did. There's some moments where I go, oh, man, I hope this leads to some really cool roles in your career, because there's a range to that guy that I'd not seen before.
Yeah.
In Kevin McAllister or whatever his name was. Not Kevin.
Buzz McAllister. Yeah. But as a mystery, like I thought it was interesting because they sort of set us up from the very opening like, oh, well, that's the murderer. And then they show us, and we see that scene later in like episode 4, and it is in fact not the big parlor room scene that we think it is. It's a blind alley.
Yeah, and I feel like that this partly owes to how they had to structure the murder mystery in the script in order to do the interactive thing.
Right.
But for me, episode 1 of the actual HBO series didn't hook me. Like, I was not immediately hooked. I liked the way it looked, and it was pretty and everything, but I kept ending up in scenes from the get-go of, like, I don't know who these people are. I haven't even seen the body. I'm pretty sure the person murdered is still walking around right now.
Yeah.
It took until middle of episode 2 or so for me to start to care. And then it took till episode 3 for me to go, this is beautifully, beautifully done. And that said, there are still moments that veer between greatness and did you edit this?
Yeah, it can be a little slow. I will definitely agree, but I was hooked from the beginning. I think part of that is I'm a Soderbergh fan. I like all his weird indie stuff. So this felt like
if it hadn't looked like his hand behind the camera, yeah. I wouldn't have stuck with it through episode 1.
Yeah, but I thought Sharon Stone was really good here.
She's great. I hope she can get more work off this.
Yeah, because she plays a different version of what we usually see her playing, the sort of the sexy character or the you know sort of ruthless character. This character is sort of an insecure narcissist.
She's sad and problematic.
Yeah,
she's had one hit and it's sad, and a couple of people call her out on it. There's some vulnerability there.
And speaking of range, Paul Rubens here as like the best friend. He was so good.
I should say it's not that it looked like a Soderbergh. I like how all Soderbergh movies look. Yeah. It's out of sight, but. And he's the guy that made Schizopolis, like we were talking earlier.
Yeah.
But really, really, when I was bored with episode 1 and thinking, okay, I'm going to keep watching this because of TV Dudes and because we're going to talk about it this week. And then Paul Rubens walked on the screen.
Yeah.
And let me say, for now and all future filmmakers ever working, if you want me to stay attentive in your show or movie, no matter what the fuck else went wrong, just put Paul Rubens on screen. I don't care what – you can make Battlefield fucking Earth 2 and I'd watch it if Paul Rubens were in it.
Well, you're going to love Inhuman Season 2 that has Paul Rubens playing a major
man.
Character.
Damn you. I would really watch it, too.
Oh, man.
I shouldn't give away these secrets. Now they got my number. Time travel and Paul Rubens, and I'll watch anything.
Well, do you guys want to move on to Counterpart, which is the new J.K. Simmons show on Stars?
Yes. Yeah.
So I was watching this, and I didn't really know what this show was going to be about. You know, I see I only saw the picture of J.K. Simmons like looking like this, like hitman in an alleyway or whatever, and I knew it was going to be some sort of like crime thriller type show. So I start watching it, and I was thinking to myself, Showtime, I don't know about your shows,
like Stars.
Stars, rather. Sorry, I'll lump Showtime in there with them.
Fair.
I don't feel like there's anything ever like epic in scope with the stuff they make, and I don't really feel like they do stuff well when they do it in sort of like genre like sci-fi or whatever. And then I watched this and I was like, oh wait, this is really fascinating.
Yeah, it's Cold War noir. It's not unlike, it's got a little bit of the pacing and the style that I liked from that old AMC show we liked. It was the one season conspiracy thing.
Rubicon.
So that's exactly what I was thinking. If Rubicon had a parallel world, I'd have really liked it more.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what I was thinking watching this.
It's like old school spy stuff. He's like reading. J.K. Simmons is this sad sack guy working at a corporation or some kind of government agency. And he's reading code phrases to people. He doesn't know what they are. He's just reading a thing. And somebody reads something back. And he goes home to his wife in a coma. And you're like, well, this is really weird. Like, what are we watching? And then all of a sudden they pull another guy into a room with a hood on his head, and it's him, and he's a badass from another dimension spy.
Yeah,
who might be defecting.
I kind of got it once he was reading the code to the other person in the room that was like, oh, okay, you guys are between worlds. That's what's going on with this whole thing. But the synopsis, the brief, what we call it, the tagline, mm-hmm. pitch line, whatever, is a cog in a bureaucratic agency discovers his agency is guarding a crossing to a parallel dimension. And I think that's like a perfectly succinct way to pitch this.
Yeah, because he has – even when he finds that out, it really doesn't tell him shit about what they do there.
Yeah. No. We still don't know.
And I love the – at least in episode two, they get into – I guess the general premise of the show is that his double shows up because there's been some kind of hit. Put out.
Yeah, well, there's an assassin running around killing people in their dimension.
And that's clearly never happened before, right?
An assassin from the other dimension. So it's kind of like Jet Li's the one, if Jet Li wasn't just trying to kill other versions of himself.
Or a little fringish, yeah.
Right.
But I love that they understand that you can go and find your other person, and even though there's going to be a moment in your lives where they diverge.
Yep.
We've been tracking this. That's all these departments do is Cold War style spy. It's just mm-hmm. track, right? Yeah. And so I like that they start extrapolating from people of like, oh, no, you guys diverged when you were 10.
Yeah.
So we know everything about your childhood up till 10.
Yeah.
Like the split between the worlds was 30 years ago. So up until that point, they had the exact same life that was tracking.
Yeah. Right.
And then some things just started diverging more and more.
I like the Philadelphia experimentness of it too. We don't know. No one knows, or if somebody knows, they're not telling what the fuck we did 30 years ago in that building. But that's now where the headquarters is because we. It's like the Being John Malkovich 7.5 floor. We don't know what we did, but it's the 7.5 floor exists now, and that closet's there. And I just love the like. No man, we don't have to understand how it works to have a department of watch that light bulb.
It's fascinating because it has such an interesting sci-fi underpinning for the rest of the plot, but it doesn't play to sci-fi at all.
No, it plays like suspense. Yeah, yeah.
It might as well be the Berlin Wall. I mean, it might as well be East-West Germany.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
The alternate world stuff of it.
Although it is used really well in the second episode where they sort of like the assassin's other half gets involved and she's basically an innocent. And things go south, and like J.K. Simmons' character is so angry about the way that was handled.
They could not have picked a better actor to pull off this particular thing. And some of the creators have said that one thing they wanted to do was to not ever have scenes that showed off they never wanted to show off the special effectness of having the same guy in the room. Like they never wanted to do anything flashy ever.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Simmons, like the first time I ever saw that guy was as Schillinger in HBO's Oz.
Yeah.
Right? So then the next time I saw him was as Jerry in The Mexican with Brad Pitt. And he's bald with this sad comb over, and he's just this sad sack that shows up to like tell Brad Pitt, like shows up in Mexico to like, hey man, you're fucked. And the whole movie, I'm sitting there going, get out of the room. Get out of the fucking room, man. J.K. Simmons is dangerous. He is going to crucify you to a parquet floor, and that's going to be the best thing that happens to you this season. Like,
you know what's funny, Les?
He's a terrifying human.
Is that I first saw him as Schillinger in Oz, and then I next saw him as the super sensitive child psychiatrist in Law & Order SVU.
Oh, my God.
You want to talk about parallel worlds. And from that point, I mean –
don't leave that kid in that room with that man.
I knew that J.K. Simmons was capable of this kind of role. He's got he's able to do a lot of different things.
He's the yellow M&M.
Yeah, he can.
J. Jonah Jameson?
He is the
Jonah
Jameson. Yeah. He's J. Jonah Jameson.
I mean, I still contend that he is the greatest Marvel character that's ever been played.
He's pretty great.
Meat. So you pay in meat.
Yeah. So the fact that he's capable of his performance does not surprise me, but I was still kind of blown away by how good he is at it, like playing both sides of it. You really believe this sort of sad end of his life, not getting his promotion version of him, and this guy who's clearly been like a badass spy for 30 years.
Yeah. And. Oh, man. You have Olivia Williams playing his wife who's in a coma in our dimension. There's more going on with her in the other dimension.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying watching this unravel so far. I thought Rubicon at the same time as well of like, okay, I loved Rubicon, but it did not move very fast. This at least has an occasional like fringe level holy shitness.
Well, and when the action gets going, it is real and like shattering. Like they do – when they start having like shootouts and that kind of thing, it feels – bad.
I'm trying to get to talk to Amy Berg with the showrunners on this. Justin Marks created this show. I think he wrote one of the Jungle Book live action
movies. He wrote the Jungle Book live action movie. Okay, I want to bring this up because this is a smart clever show that really moves. It's like it feels like prestige TV at its best in a lot of ways. This is by a guy whose first published screenplay was Street Fighter, The Legend of Chun-Li, and whose next screenplay was The Jungle Book, which The Jungle Book is great. Don't get me wrong. I love the live-action Jungle
Book.
It's
an adaptation, right?
But it is nothing like Counterpart.
So they brought in Amy Berg, who is from Eureka and just has a long television pedigree.
Yeah.
I guess because Mark probably does not have a lot of television back experience in the show.
I mean, as a producer, he's new to all this.
And I believe she is leaving between seasons one and two. I think they've been picked up for a season two. But she has said on her Twitter that this is the first show she's ever started where they began filming with all 10 episodes of script written. Huh. That shows say that kind of shit a lot of like, mm-hmm. Oh, we've got it all planned out. No, they had all these scripts written, and granted, every one of those scripts went through so many color change iterations that they all ended up in like double colors. I mean, like they all went through like 11 or 12 friggin' changes.
Yeah,
but they at least honest to God started with this whole thing, and
it wasn't just a Bible. Yeah. They had like the entire.
She had them sit down. She had the whole writer's room sit down and write the manual for the Department of Interchange. Like she set him down for like 2 weeks. Like you guys are going to produce this manual for if you were an employee there, what would this be like? So that, and then the huge spreadsheets of tracking.
Just so
shit.
They really understand the world.
Yeah.
Both this, like this feels so. Well. I'm looking at Amy Berg's rundown, and she's done a lot of stuff. She's worked on Eureka, Person of Interest, Leverage.
Of interest.
A lot of good shows.
I just saw that Richard Schiff is going to be in this. Yeah, and
yes.
I'm like, of course he is. Yes. He's in everything.
Yeah, but like. If you told me that Amy Berg, if I looked at her CV and I looked at what Justin Marks did, I would not have thought they'd come up with this show because this show is so – it's got a darkness to it. It's got a precision to it. It's really fantastic.
It still moves a little slow at times. It reminds me – I mean, you guys brought up Rubicon, which I think is a great comparison. Americans as well I put in there.
Yeah, sure.
And I'm wondering though how if they are going to lean a little bit more into this – bizarre sci-fi aspect, if that will be punched up a little bit more.
I get the impression that sci-fi is going to be a spice, but that the main ingredients is that 70s style spying.
If anything, because right now, at least right now, we still don't know what's behind the kill order conspiracy, which doesn't quite seem to be sanctioned by either side.
Right, yeah.
So I'm wondering if it has to do with whoever does or doesn't know what made the gate. They've also started to explain in episode two, they started to explain a little bit differently of like, so we made we discovered a portal to your world. And somebody says, no, that's not accurate. There was one world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We didn't discover a door between two worlds. You broke one world into a bifurcated two worlds.
Yeah.
And they've just gotten further and further apart. Nobody's brought up yet. Has that only ever happened once?
Yeah, or are there other?
Do we have
worlds?
Any idea what did it, yeah. Or what? Like, I like the
or how to replicate
the
it.
Unknown ramifications, and I'm sure if there's a department studying it, there's definitely still a department screwing with it.
Yeah,
see, you bringing up the anecdote about them writing the manual for mm-hmm. the department would make me think that they are still that aspect, the bizarre alternate dimension aspect is. To some extent critical, and having a deep understanding of that in the writer's room and how they can play into that more as this evolves, what this agency is doing and how much power and information they have and how that will play out.
I think it's going to I think the sci-fi-ness of it is going to matter, but I have a lot of faith off these first two episodes that they're going to be able to handle it in a way that won't where the sci-fi-ness isn't going to be carrying me through it because I'm a sci-fi nerd at the expense – that low standard you were talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That the fact that there's a parallel world won't make up for the fact – like won't need to make up for the fact that the rest of the show's weak. This is going to be a spectacular Cold War espionage show where the wall just happens to cross into another world.
Yeah.
And that lends a couple of extra plot devices is the way I feel about it off these two episodes. I'm really impressed with stars in this. Spartacus and their other fare have not impressed me quite like this.
I actually think I like this better than American Gods so far.
I think you're right.
I mean, visually, American Gods is phenomenal.
Yeah, yeah, sure. Anything Brian Fuller is involved with,
anything he brings his cinematographers on to with him, and
but this also has a just fantastic book.
This just scratches a lot of spy noir itch.
Yeah,
for
same,
me,
same here.
Yeah,
I wanted more Rubicon. So
yep, me too.
And J.K. Simmons, I'll watch. Damn, he's good.
I would say, listeners, if you are interested in this kind of show, maybe you get a Starz account or find some other way to watch it. I don't know.
Just go ahead and get Starz, binge American Gods, and this at the same time.
Yeah, there you go. All right. Well, I think we will wrap things up there. Man, I saw like so many other shows have dropped, and I was wondering if we were going to be discussing other shows. And,
oh,
like,
yeah, it's all broken down.
Like, are we going to be talking about Good Place pretty soon because that just finished its second season?
Man,
are we going to be talking about AP Bio, the new Glenn Howerton comedy?
It's all on the list. You know me. I got you covered.
You got us covered, baby. I'm very excited for whatever we're going to be discussing next week as well. And listeners, I want to say thank you guys for tuning in. Les, Randy, thank you guys.
Thank you, Grant.
Yep. We'll be back next week, but until then,
TV Dudes out!
The TV Dudes is an independently run podcast and a member of the Permanent Record Podcast Network. We are exclusively listener supported. If you'd like to help us out, please go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. You can like us on Facebook and Twitter @TV Dudes and help us out on iTunes by giving us a 5-star rating and writing a review. To find out more about us, go to thetvdudes.com and permanentrcrd.com. I'm Grant Davis. Thanks for listening.